15 episode, Conscious Suffering. There are days when mountain winds beckon so much freedom that the soul seems to float above the earth, soaring into the clouds. Such days are especially beautiful for spiritual conversations. That's why today's meeting, the Keeper of Knowledge, decided to hold in an unusual place, in the sacred temple on the mountaintop. Skilled masters from ancient times once erected it so that the disciples of the sage would now come here in search of truth. In a straight line, they climbed up the steep staircase, winding around the mountain, occasionally stopping on wide stairwells carved directly into the rock to catch their breath, when finally all the disciples arrived at the destination and settled in the main hall of the temple. Behind their backs, the keeper himself appeared. His figure in traditional black attire seemed to glow from within with invisible light. His face showed no signs of fatigue after the long ascent up the mountain. In his deep, clear eyes, there was tranquility and calmness.
"Greetings, my dear disciples,"
began the Keeper of Knowledge with a clear, pleasant voice.
"Your journey here was long and exhausting. Tell me, what did you understand while coming? What thoughts and emotions arose in you after this challenging journey?"
A sporty young man in a dark blue Indian costume raised his hand. His long black hair was braided into a tight high ponytail at the nape, and his brown eyes burned with genuine interest under the arches of his broad eyebrows. The sage nodded, passing the word to the disciple.
"Great master, am I correct in understanding that our ascent up the mountain can be called conscious suffering? After all, we undertook a long and difficult journey to see you and gain wisdom."
"You're right, Philip,"
smiled the Keeper of Knowledge.
"When a person consciously goes through suffering but does so for a spiritual purpose, to strengthen faith, rid oneself of sins, then through this suffering, one gains development. It is these kinds of sufferings that one should practice, while all other unconscious sufferings should be discarded."
"Master, what do you mean by unconscious sufferings? Somehow I don't understand,"
timidly spoke a blue-eyed, beautiful girl with silky blonde curls down to her waist.
"Alisa, unconscious or mechanical sufferings are useless sufferings that lead us nowhere. For example, a person suffers from paranoia, invents problems and illnesses for oneself, and begins to believe in them, suffers from one's own sick imagination. But an example of conscious suffering."
The sage spread his arms wide, raising them towards the snow-white vaults of the ceiling.
"Once upon a time, this place was just a barren mountain, but people wanted to pray and built this temple. They began to carry stones here, one by one, overcoming heat, fatigue, and thirst, all because they had a great spiritual goal, to build a temple for prayer."
"It's hard to climb up here even without a stone, and with a load, it's probably impossible,"
skeptically remarked an elderly, gray-eyed man. The long journey up the mountain particularly exhausted him.
"Everything is possible, Matt, if you have a high spiritual goal and the right attitude,"
calmly replied the master.
"And to set the right attitude, you need to get really angry at yourself, experience guilt for your sins and laziness. This mechanical suffering torments a person, while conscious suffering carries purification. After it, things only become easier. For example, you haul a stone up the mountain and leave all your sins at the top along with it. Such a ritual leads a person to development."
"Master, tell me, if unconscious sufferings bring us no benefit, why then does everyone around us love to suffer and endure?"
Alice again asked, raising a curious gaze to the Keeper of Knowledge.
"It's all childhood indoctrination,"
the sage said sadly.
"Parents teach their children to suffer, to freak out and shout, and then they wonder why their children grow up so nervous, cruel, and disconnected. It all comes from childhood."
"Here's an interesting thing. When you're hauling the stone up the mountain, the motor center is at work. But when you experience guilt, then which center is active? Emotional or intellectual?
Philip asked thoughtfully.
Reevaluation happens at the intellectual center when we reassess some of our vices. Then the negative part of the center kicks in. We imagine ourselves to be great people, and then because of guilt, internal dissonance arises. A person realizes that they are not great or superheroes at all, but weak and insignificant bugs, roadside dust. After this realization, a person begins to develop, because they fully realize that they still have a lot to learn. Proper spiritual work on the intellectual center begins after this.
Beloved Master, why is it that we can endure unconscious sufferings for days, but conscious ones we cannot endure for long? Physically, it's very difficult. Why is that happening?
Curious Alice addressed the sage once again.
Because there is no habit,
explained the Keeper of Knowledge.
After all, parents didn't teach us from childhood to consciously sacrifice, to repent, and to have useful remorse of conscience. They taught, on the contrary, selfishness, suffering, and psychopathy. They teach to suffer because of trivial reasons, others' opinions, and sick imagination. After that, it's hard to experience conscious suffering. There's no skill. Because to experience conscious suffering, elevated emotions are needed. It's already a more subtle energy, and a person simply isn't used to generating it.
Master, tell me, if a person leads a healthy lifestyle or engages in sports, is that conscious suffering? Are such sufferings beneficial if they are not related to spiritual development?
Asked Matt.
Yes, of course,
smiled the Keeper of Knowledge.
Any suffering that makes us better is beneficial. When we learn a new profession and go through a lot of hard work, we put in a lot of effort to make everything go well. And even if suffering arises involuntarily, but it is associated with development, then it is useful.
Wise Master,
addressed the Master, a dark-haired slender girl with a small bead piercing above her upper lip.
Recently I read in one book such lines, by suffering, one can earn good. This is precisely about conscious suffering. We, as spiritual people, understand this. But how can we explain this truth to people who are not spiritual to help them get on the right path?
Very good question, Camilla.
The Keeper of Knowledge praised the disciple.
It's easiest to explain to non-spiritual people through examples. For example, let's say a person with excess weight starts going to the gym. At first, it's hard for them. Shortness of breath, sweat pouring, all muscles ache. The body is not used to the load. But the person gathers all their willpower, starts getting angry at themselves for their own weakness. Through pain and discomfort, they continue to work on themselves. And over time, it becomes easier for them. Muscles become strong, the body becomes resilient and fit. The person starts to enjoy working on themselves, becomes a real athlete. This is an example of conscious suffering from which a person benefits. The same applies to the spiritual path. If we experience guilt, repent, pray, perform complex spiritual practices, they also transform our subtle bodies. They grow, change. The soul becomes stronger and more enduring.
Master, I remember you once said that everyone has a certain amount of suffering. What does this amount depend on, and what will happen if this amount is exceeded?
Asked Philip. The topic of conscious and useless suffering had long interested him. So now he listened with great attention to every word of the sage and tried to fix it in his memory.
Unconscious sufferings can affect people differently. Some may develop schizophrenia over time, some psychosis, some other illnesses develop. It is necessary to carefully monitor which part is weakened due to meaningless suffering and train it. If the body starts to hurt, then you need to engage in sports, lead a healthy lifestyle. If there are problems with nerves and psyche, then work on emotions. If there's a mess in the head, then you need to instill the right thoughts in yourself.
Great Master, tell me, if correct suffering leads to development, why is it developed only in humans?
Asked Camilla with interest, raising her light brown, honey-colored eyes to the Keeper of Knowledge.
Why do trees grow on their own, without any suffering, and animals too? Why only humans, to strive for growth, must go through suffering?
Interesting observation, Camilla.
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled warmly, directing rays of light, acceptance, and unconditional love to the disciple.
But mechanical growth is also inherent in humans. For example, a small child grows mechanically up to a certain limit, predetermined by nature. But beyond that, to grow to a spiritual level and become, for example, an angel, special efforts are needed. If a person lived like a plant, they would only grow and reproduce. But humans also have a spiritual component, which allows them to grow and develop infinitely and diversely.
Beloved Master, if a person has already reached the level of development of an angel, can they go back to the level of a plant?
A slender adult man in a light blue linen shirt addressed the Master.
Yes, Nick,
answered the Keeper of Knowledge.
It's always much easier to descend than to ascend. If a person achieves such an elevated state through great efforts, works on themselves, awakens their conscience, then it will be much harder for them to descend because they achieved it through their own efforts. And if everything comes easy for a person, then it will be much easier for them to descend. For example, a child. When they are born, they have a million opportunities. They are open and receptive to the world. They can stay in an awakened state for a long time. But this state is not their achievement. It is simply inherent in them by nature. Therefore, with age, they very quickly lose it. They immerse themselves in negative emotions, adopt silly and harmful attitudes.
So a child loses these qualities because they were given to them just like that, without effort?
Clarified Alice.
Yes, they didn't make any effort to get them, so they didn't value them and couldn't multiply them,
the Master replied.
Well, sometimes you look at a child like that, such an angel, you just can't get enough of him. He's kind, responsive, and then they grow up into some drunkard and troublemaker. It's even surprising how it happens,
sadly said Camilla, wiping away the tear that had welled up on her cheek.
Great Keeper. What if there is a mentor next to the child from childhood who will point out this awakened state, direct the child's attention? Then will it be easier for them to keep high emotions later? And will they continue to make efforts to achieve them?
Suggested the blue-eyed disciple with delicate facial features and a neat black beard.
Good observation, Alex.
The eyes of the sage sparkled.
With a good mentor, a person can rise to a very high level of development. They can even become a true angel themselves.
An elderly woman in a long pink dress raised her hand. Despite her advanced age, her face did not look tired at all. Her light gray eyes shone with wisdom and love, and her gray hair, gathered in a loose bun, looked more like a fashionable hairstyle than an effect of aging.
Master, I've heard about this practice with stones that you mentioned. We did it at one seminar. Everyone chose a stone for themselves, some bigger, some smaller, according to their abilities, and everyone carried them up the mountain. But there were people who cheated and chose very small stones for themselves to make the journey easy and effortless. But Master, won't there be any spiritual benefit from such an ascent?
Yes, Lana, you are right. When a person cheats like that, they are only deceiving themselves. In doing so, they deprive themselves of development. If a person continues to be lazy, they won't be able to turn away from the crooked path they were set on in childhood. So they will continue to suffer from wrong attitudes, degrade, and decay from within. It was a good opportunity to take hold of themselves, to start developing, but the person did not seize it.
sighed the keeper of knowledge. He sincerely felt sorry for such unhappy people.
Master, I heard a story once,
Alex spoke up.
People had to carry crosses from one city to another. And one worker decided to cheat. He took the smallest cross for himself and went lightly. Everyone else was struggling under the weight of their crosses, and he was walking, humming songs. And then they came to a huge chasm. Everyone started throwing their crosses across the gap to cross freely to the other side. But the lazy one had a short cross, so he couldn't cross the abyss.
A very wise tale,
smiled the master.
The point is that if we avoid conscious suffering, we only make things worse for ourselves.
Master, am I correct in understanding that when a person suffers, they experience very strong emotions, and it is through these emotions that there is a kind of crystallization inside them? So these changes are not so easily lost?
Matt asked.
Yes, it's like shaping metal,
explained the Keeper of Knowledge.
So, everything happens because of emotions? Are suffering and strong emotions the power that binds and crystallizes a strong state within us?
Camilla clarified.
Not only emotions, but also willpower is very important, because the instinctive center will initially interfere a lot. It sends fatigue and pain to a person. In such moments, it is important not to give up, to go all the way, to overcome discomfort and fatigue. And this is impossible without willpower. The moment of transformation is the most difficult in a person. It requires effort and is often painful. For example, if a person is used to being offended, it will be very difficult for them to change. They start to break. Dependence on meaningless suffering can be as strong as on heavy drugs. But if a person overcomes this dependence, then it becomes easy and pleasant for them. They understand how much time they spent in meaningless suffering and negative emotions, and make every effort not to return to that point.
Great Keeper.
A very thin girl with straight light hair and many freckles scattered across her face, neck, and exposed shoulders, addressed the master.
Am I right in understanding that gaining experience is one of the most important goals in life? I often notice that there is suffering in my life, but I suffer precisely because of the false personality. And only after the sessions with you does this false personality begin to shut down, and I go through a reevaluation. There is a desire to repent and change. So, is it only thanks to the mentor that the spiritual part is activated?
Yes, Ella.
The sage spoke with a deep, calm voice. His speech echoed lightly off the snowy stone walls and rose up, reaching the very vaults, spreading throughout the hall with the energy of wisdom, love, and acceptance. The disciples felt the energy of the master's voice, like a gentle vibration, passing through their bodies and warming them from within with a beautiful light.
Without a wise mentor, we would all live and suffer,
continued the master.
Only thanks to the mentor do we understand that, it turns out, we can live without these ugly attitudes imposed on us in childhood, that we can stop tormenting ourselves and start developing, directing our energy in the right direction, growing above ourselves, and being happy.
That's right, Master,
Lana said with a broad smile, and her radiant eyes seemed to shine even brighter.
Before I met you, I was completely different. After all, I was raised in a non-spiritual family. From childhood, I was very jealous, touchy. I cried very often over trifles. But now, finally, I feel happy. I feel inner strength in my soul, and I want to grow further. Thank you for this revelation, Master.
Dear Lana, I am glad that you managed to find yourself and escape from the dark world of false attitudes and negativity. Continue your path upwards.
The Keeper of Knowledge smiled with a radiant smile, looking at the disciples with understanding and warmth.
Beloved Master, do you remember saying to us such a phrase? we will suffer anyway, but to suffer joyfully is more beneficial. Is this related to our physical level? Because someday we will all grow old and experience suffering related to our bodies. But this is the wrong kind of suffering, due to incorrect attitudes towards things. After all the events that happen to us are designed by God. They are all necessary for something, am I right?
Alex asked.
Yes, people often have a false, incorrect assessment of the situation. Some feel sad in the rain, while others rejoice. Some perceive all difficulties as punishment, while others see them as God's test, which should strengthen the body and soul. This all also stems from childhood. We are taught to give everything ratings from infancy. Called a fool, negative rating. You should be offended. Called good, positive rating. You should rejoice. Due to such a stereotypical, imposed system of evaluation, a person stops thinking independently and seeing things realistically. They perceive everything through the distorted prism of other people's evaluations. However, if a person changes their reaction to evaluation, they can start thinking sensibly. For example, they were called a fool, but instead of being offended, they thank for pointing out their flaw. They begin to develop and work on themselves.
Great keeper. Tell me, do all these sufferings come from the false personality, from the ego?
Ella asked again.
Because when a person achieves righteousness, any suffering seems to them just another test, and they thank God for it. That is, they overcome difficulties with gratitude and acceptance. If a person is selfish and focused only on themselves, they do not see God's providence in what is happening. They suffer from it and may even become angry and offended with God for what is happening to them. But if a person achieves holiness, then they perceive everything as a lesson from God, see God in everything, seek to connect with God, and constantly ask themselves, what does God want to tell me with this? Zerania, what should I do? How should I fulfill God's will? What is God's plan and what is my role? What should I do to fulfill my duty to God?
You are right, Ella. If a person's evaluation changes, then they are moving towards development. If our evaluation is false, imposed by others, then we can worsen the negative situation ourselves. Something happened, and instead of thinking, repenting, and solving the problem, a person starts to worry, fuss, brings themselves to panic and hysteria, and intensifies their suffering from the situation. It is very important to learn to calmly look at things, not to succumb to the influence of our negative emotions. Then we can smooth out the negative situation and endure it easier.
Yes, there are people who will bump into something and then spend months regretting it, pitying themselves, how much it hurt and offended them,
Philip said with a hint of irony in his voice.
There are such people,
the sage said calmly.
They cultivate negative emotions in themselves and start suffering even more because of it, even if the situation is completely trivial.
Master, but reactions to certain events are the result of the action of neural connections that have formed in the brain. They are intertwined and now dictate to us such a reaction. So we need to learn how to control them, disengage them, so that they give the right reactions?
Alice asked with interest, casually tossing back her silky locks.
Yes, these connections can be controlled. The main thing is to understand where such incorrect neural connections came from. For example, from stupid imposed stereotypes. So in childhood, they instilled something that now messes up the whole life. If a person understands that they can react differently to situations, then they can already, by conscious effort of will, control their reaction, forming correct connections in their consciousness, which already form correct reactions and tendencies. A person begins to practice knowledge, consciously choosing a reaction, mentally replaying the correct reaction instead of the destructive one, and gradually the neurons rearrange. This old connection breaks, and the reaction goes in a new way. Of course, not everything is so easy and simple, but if we make efforts, practice conscious suffering, then everything begins to work out.
Concluded the Keeper of Knowledge. The sun, which seemingly not long ago rose from behind the mountain range, illuminating the ascent of the disciples on the mountain with the glow of dawn, was now in its full power. It moved to the middle of the sky and gently streamed white rays through the transparent roof of the temple. The conversation continued. A dark-haired woman with soft, almost childlike features decided to ask her question. She leaned forward slightly, lifting the hem of her long pleated skirt above her ankles, and looked into the Master's eyes with deep interest.
Beloved Master, I have studied Gurdjieff's biography a lot, and recently I heard the theory that he deliberately maimed himself in an accident to study the abilities of his biobot, and through spiritual practice, restore his health. It's like God, to develop, initially limited himself and placed himself in a human with its subtle bodies and societal programs, and now gains experience through people who make conscious efforts to free themselves from these programs. Did I understand everything correctly, Master?
The girl smiled shyly, waiting for an answer.
Yes, Dallara,
the sage pronounced.
That's what did. He created the physical level, where souls are limited, so that they consciously strive for liberation. This is the game of God. He separated particles from himself and locked them in bodies, like in Matryoshka dolls. And these particles strongly strive back to God, leading a person like a compass. But unfortunately, many people do not look at this compass inside. They only pay attention to their earthly shells and the needs of their bodies. They don't even think about the soul.
And then they wonder why there are so many failures and stupid unconscious sufferings in their lives.
Ella Susbarow.
Yes, that's why we need to practice conscious suffering as Gurdjieff did.
The Keeper of Knowledge replied.
This great mystic sage staged a real Golgotha for himself to gain huge development, and even deliberately created an accident for himself to then make efforts to overcome difficulties.
So we can only develop in difficult situations?
Matt asked.
Yes, only when a person overcomes difficulties, they move towards development. It's not necessary to arrange an accident for oneself like Gurdjieff did. But we can practice conscious suffering. Then our development will go uphill at a rapid pace.
Master, I just can't understand why God created this game, which essentially makes no sense.
Camilla asked, bewildered.
Why did he separate particles from himself? Simply so that they would strive back to him? I just don't understand it.
If God hadn't separated particles from himself, there would be nothing around us.
The sage softly spoke.
Just endless emptiness and nothing else. Therefore, in the beginning, God created divine planes. Firstly, the most subtle ones, filled with bliss, angels, and archangels. Then a coarser physical world, populated by animals, birds, and humans. And so that all this creation could develop independently, God infused a special particle of himself into each creation. Without this particle, we would be at the level of development like plants or even stones.
Great Keeper, it turns out that God divided himself and populated the whole world with himself?
Philip clarified uncertainly.
Yes,
the Master said peacefully.
God is in every aspect of his creation, on every level, both in the subtle and in the coarse, and every particle strives back to him. After all, the physical level is given for development. It is tormenting for people. Therefore, the Creator wisely foresaw everything, so that souls would not suffer on earth and could return to him. Each particle goes its own way, gains some experiences, lives its life, and returns back to the Creator. It finds peace and bliss.
A large man in dark green hiking pants and a rough linen shirt raised his hand. His slightly graying eyebrows were slightly furrowed, and his entire demeanor expressed a thoughtful, contemplative process. The disciple had listened to the master's speeches more than once, but today's conversation impressed him especially.
"Master, please tell me,"
he began, hiding his excitement in his voice.
"Does it mean that God is absolutely in everything, in some lowly things, and in lofty ones as well? Does that mean that inanimate objects have no Atman? How should one perceive this correctly?"
"Good thought, Charlie,"
the keeper of knowledge spoke. Sensing the excitement in the disciple's voice, he gently smiled and transmitted to him his energy of goodness, acceptance, and unconditional love. All the excitement seemed to dissolve in this energy, making room inside for bright, sublime emotions and deep reflections on the knowledge that was about to unfold for him.
"Atman is the subtlest consciousness, and consciousness must reside in something. If Atman were not shielded by other subtle bodies and laws of the physical world, it would immediately return to God and dissolve in him. First, a person needs to develop, receive some lessons on earth, experience conscious suffering. Only then can the soul learn some lessons and return to God."
"So, do inanimate objects not have Atman?"
Charlie clarified.
"Yes, they don't have Atman. After all, simple things around us are created by humans. A table, a chair, a house. All these are human creations. How could God infuse something into them?"
smiled the keeper of knowledge.
"But what about mountains, stones, rivers? God created them, didn't he?"
Lana joined the conversation.
"Well, they can be animated, inhabited by spirits and deities,"
the sage said mysteriously, folding his fingers into a steeple.
"For example, the spirit of Ayami lives in mountains or rivers. Nature is also animated, but in a slightly different way. Not like ordinary beings."
"Besides, what, for example, would animals, fish, and birds do if there were no rivers, mountains, forests? Everything is wisely arranged by God so that all beings can live on earth,"
said Delara, adjusting her skirt. The keeper of knowledge nodded.
"Master, but all buildings and objects were once trees, stones, or possibly even living beings, and then people use all of this as a resource. Is this correct?"
Charlie asked again.
"Everything that surrounds us in nature has a soul,"
the sage pronounced.
"Ancient people understood this better than us, so they treated all objects with great respect. They understood that a mountain is not just an inanimate stone. There dwells the spirit of Ayami. They even wrote such a fairy tale, The Mistress of the Copper Mountain. Over time, this understanding has faded from people's memory. It takes very strong emotions to feel that life is everywhere, that each object is imbued with its own spirit. And as soon as we engage our intellect more, everything seems dead to us."
"Master, but our entire life is connected with the elements,"
Alex spoke softly.
"Everywhere in nature, we are surrounded by water, air, earth. Essentially, the entire physical level consists of the elements. Is that right?"
"Yes, the physical level is the elements, and the energy of these elements depends on their state. Ice, for example, is a coarse substance, but when it turns into water, it becomes more subtle, more energy appears. And if it turns into steam, into air, even more so."
A graceful female hand and a long white glove rose up. The master calmly nodded to the girl, allowing her to ask her question.
"Master, please tell me,"
she began with a low, melodious voice.
"It's interesting. It turns out that God, in order to know himself, reached such a stage of suffering that he created the physical world. Does that mean that God is just some kind of masochist? Why didn't he make the physical world simpler and more positive? Why should development necessarily happen through suffering?"
"Yeah, the creator is wise and fair,"
the keeper of knowledge spoke softly and confidently.
he understood that the soul must evolve. It cannot constantly experience only bliss, otherwise it will not mature. It won't be able to distinguish between good and evil, sweet from salty. That is why God created the physical world so complex, so that the soul could gain experiences not found in the subtle level, to acquire the fullness of wisdom, impressions, and perceptions. Because without experiencing darkness, we would never understand what light is. For example, children who are pampered from childhood, given the best toys, provided with full care from all sides, grow up spoiled and lazy, unable and unwilling to do anything. But there are children whose parents did not pamper them with luxury from childhood, who were raised differently. They understand, to have something, you need to work for it first, to make an effort. And they grow up to be hard-working, wise individuals who understand the value of conscious suffering.
Master, I think all of us can be compared to children.
Alice spoke up.
Yes, Alice.
The sage smiled.
If a child is accustomed to conscious suffering from childhood, not indulged needlessly, taught diligence and wisdom, then such a person finds true happiness in life. You cannot feed on honey and sugar all your life. Bitterness in life must also be present. It's for our own good.
Thank you, Keeper.
Aya folded her hands in a namaste gesture and bowed her head low.
Now I see that the Lord has truly arranged everything very wisely.
The master spread his arms wide, as if embracing all the disciples at once with his attention, and smiled kindly, while another question arose in the hall.
Beloved master, I am a bit confused,
Charlie admitted.
You said that in the subtle level, there are only positive emotions. But yesterday in the cartoon, we saw that Jan brought negative emotions there. There was a real hell around him until the face of the master appeared before him. So, does it mean that after experiencing the full range of sensations in the physical world, a person brings these impressions with them into the subtle level? Or how should this be understood correctly?
We must not forget that the etheric level is also inhabited by various creatures.
The Keeper of Knowledge pronounced.
Larvae, spirits, and other beings. They are the ones who attack humans in the subtle level. But there's no need to fear them. It's easy to get rid of them in the subtle level because we can see them there. It's enough to simply pray, ask God for help, visualize the face of the Master, and that's it. In the physical world, it's much more difficult, because we don't even see all these larvae, and it is they who cultivate useless negative emotions in us. Jealousy, anger, melancholy, from which we cannot part. If a person constantly experiences meaningless suffering, then it's very easy for larvae to possess them. Thus a person can get stuck in some negative emotions for their whole life, until the master pulls them out of hell. Opens their eyes to the truth.
Master, it's interesting, isn't it, that God created the world in 7 days? This is an allegory for the 7 human shells, right?
Lana asked.
Not quite. 7 days is the law of the octave. Only one interval is specified, that he created for 6 days, and on the 7th day, he rested. Creation proceeds in the form of an octave.
Master, but in the teachings, it's written that God slept, but it's not said anywhere that he woke up,
Delara said thoughtfully.
It's good that you noticed that.
The sage smiled.
The fact is that the 7th day is still ongoing, and God is sleeping. That's why such chaos exists in the world. This is how the law of the octave works. First, some actions take place, and then there is a lull, an interval that needs to be overcome. By effort, conscious suffering. The more people awaken from the endless succession of meaningless sufferings, the sooner the octave will continue. But if we fall asleep during this interval, then that's it. There's nothing more. Everything stops.
Great keeper, am I right in understanding that the wiser the soul, the more it strives to conquer difficulties? It doesn't seek rewards but challenges. Is there a limit for the soul, a level that can lead to enlightenment? After all, the line is very thin. Even the great masters, Gurdjieff, Osho, Castaneda, all said that it's deadly dangerous to develop a disciple. It's necessary to delicately sense the gradation of conscious sufferings. It's necessary to feel when to stop, so as not to physically harm the person,
Philip said thoughtfully.
Yes,
exclaimed Ia.
Osho, for example, said that not every camel can be turned into a lion. So does each soul have its own limit? Its own threshold of conscious sufferings?
Of course there is a threshold. God won't give a person more trials than they can bear,
said the keeper of knowledge, closing his eyes.
But we mustn't forget that there are two kinds of difficulties. Some are useless, bringing only suffering, negativity, and self-destruction. And others are beneficial difficulties, leading a person to development. It's necessary to clearly distinguish between them, to try to avoid harmful sufferings. And then, the more useless sufferings we discard, the more societal stereotypes we shed, the more beneficial conscious sufferings we can endure.
Beloved Master, am I understanding correctly that it's not about the level of difficulties, but about the attitude towards them? Meaning, meaningless sufferings lead us to self-destruction, nervous and mental illnesses, while conscious sufferings lead to enlightenment and development. Right?
Asked the middle-aged man, nervously adjusting his curly red beard.
Yes, Andrew. Meaningless suffering always leads to bad things, but many don't even think about useful difficulties. They don't think about the need to awaken conscience and fight negative emotions, overcome weaknesses and harmful habits. That's why they have so many problems in life, which they blame on everyone around them, the government, the president, everyone in the world, but not themselves.
The sage sighed heavily.
Master, can we say that all these idiotic sufferings are so easily cultivated within oneself because of larvae? When they sense a person's weakness, they start to press on them, implanting thoughts of useless suffering and torment into their consciousness. And beneficial sufferings like the remorse of conscience, on the contrary, are hard to awaken because one must fight against larvae and spirits that tempt, leading to negative emotions. So, on one hand, you're alone, awakening your conscience by willpower. And on the other hand, a whole horde of demons is pushing you into the abyss. Am I reasoning correctly?
Charlie asked.
That's a valid thought, but we can't blame everything on larvae. Upbringing also plays an important role. The ability to awaken noble emotions within oneself. If a person wasn't taught to develop from childhood, then as they grow older, it will be very difficult for them to fight negative emotions because they will be influenced by the bad example of their parents, TV shows and television, which cultivate meaningless suffering.
Indeed, they start mutilating with wrong sufferings even from school,
Ella exclaimed.
For example, they make us read the novel Anna Karenina, author's note, famous Russian novel, where the unhappy main character suffered from jealousy and negative emotions due to foolish upbringing, ran from one man to another, and in the end, threw herself under a train, tormented by stupid, idiotic sufferings. But no one teaches us to awaken conscience within ourselves.
The girl sighed and wiped away a tear from her lashes. There was an approving murmur among the disciples. Everyone agreed with Ella's opinion.
And the story about Mumu, author's note, famous Russian story, about the spineless peasant who drowned his dog at the command of the mistress. I still get goosebumps from this work,
Andrew exclaimed indignantly. The discussion was interrupted by a slender youth with a fluffy tuft of light hair on his head. He was very young, but his eyes reflected calm confidence and deep wisdom, making it difficult to determine his true age.
Master, may I ask another question about the game of God?
He spoke with a ringing tenor voice.
Of course, Frank.
the keeper of knowledge smiled, showering the youth with rays of affection, warmth, and wisdom.
When God separated Atman from himself and placed it in humans, he foresaw that this particle should return to him later. But does a person have to want to return to God on their own? Or does the Creator also take some actions to pull Atman towards himself? And what happens if the soul doesn't see God, doesn't want to go to him? Everything is planned so that a person develops,
the sage answered.
But all people come from different incarnations. Someone reincarnates from a worm into a human, someone from a butterfly, someone from a lion. That's why God creates different trials for everyone, leaves some clues for everyone, so that a person can come to God through them. Thus, people experience some blows, sufferings, understand what mistakes should not be made. Some understand it from the first time, and some from the tenth. And when a person starts to think, begins to reflect, refuses from stupid stereotypes and listens to themselves, then they embark on the path of development.
Master, if in life a person has well absorbed all the lessons, gone through conscious sufferings, approached God and spiritual life, will they continue to reincarnate as humans? To experience life after life?
Dilara asked anxiously.
If the soul successfully passed all trials, absorbed all the lessons that God wanted to give them, then in the next life, they can already move on to a new stage and may even become an angel. But this is only if a person has been engaged in spiritual practices a lot in life. If they are mentally still half a butterfly or a cockroach, carry on themselves the mistakes of past lives, the burden of stereotypes and meaningless sufferings, then they will reincarnate on Earth until they correct all their mistakes. At each stage, the process of development takes place differently. If the soul is very mature, then it itself goes to spirituality, and the young soul needs to be pushed.
Great Keeper, am I right in understanding that when the soul comes into the physical world, it faces the problems and trials of this world, and it involuntarily becomes like a cockroach, seeing the negative examples of parents, school teachers, and silly TV shows? And if the soul has its own experience, aspirations, and a developed magnetic center, then it's easier for it to break free from external negative influences. But if not, then will it continue to live like a cockroach from life to life?
Aya asked, raising her calm, light green eyes to the master, as if made of delicate bottle glass.
Good reasoning, Iya,
the sage praised the girl.
Indeed, if a person has been made foolish by upbringing, and their soul is very young, without experience, then they can live their whole life like a cockroach until they meet a wise mentor who opens their eyes. If the soul already has some experience, it won't be satisfied with its life. It will seek out a master, feel the need to seek the truth, strive for wisdom, correct mistakes, and experience conscious sufferings. Such a soul begins to search for a way out, rebels against parents, foolish school teachers, throws off the shackles, starts on their own path. This means that the soul has matured and embarked on the path of development, beginning to awaken conscience, consciousness, and free itself from the influence of a sick society.
Master, if the soul is already ready for such a spiritual leap, ready to abandon foolish social norms and come to God, in this interval, it is also filled with various things. What are these things? What helps to gather oneself, concentrate on the path, and strive only for God? Can one concentrate in such a way as to not stretch all these efforts over many lives, but accomplish it in one?
Frank asked.
I mean, I have everything, a wise mentor, teachings, community, but I still lack some unity, concentration in striving for God.
You're doing great, Frank. Your desire for God is truly very strong and correct. You have already traversed a very long and difficult path.
The sage's eyes shone with happiness for his student.
But you lack a small but very important detail. Correct thinking. Thoughts are the simplest thing. So often we don't even notice what we're thinking. We don't notice how we disconnect, fall asleep. Even during spiritual practice, one can lose mindfulness and fall into waking sleep. Start doing everything mechanically, like a robot. It's necessary to pay close attention to your thoughts. Try to be aware of yourself every second and scold yourself if you suddenly disconnect. Awaken conscience, not justify yourself. Always strive for maximum effort. Then awakening will begin. As soon as there is correct thinking, there will be a correct result.
Thank you, great master. I will definitely pay attention to this,
Frank reverently said, bowing his head before the sage. The other disciples followed suit. Now all the disciples were in a sattvic state, each of them feeling clarity of mind and recalling everything previously said by the sage and the participants of the fruitful conversation, as if trying to organize all the received knowledge neatly and fix it in their memories. Thanks to the master, they now understood that all mechanical sufferings bring no benefit, yet most people enjoy tormenting themselves and suffering. This happens because of indoctrination from childhood. Parents themselves teach their children to suffer, to have psychological breakdowns, and to scream. And then they wonder why their children grow up to be so nervous, cruel, and withdrawn. For all of them, the knowledge was revealed that such suffering should be discarded, but instead, they should engage in conscious sufferings, which are beneficial for our soul. This helps towards the spiritual goal, to strengthen faith, to rid oneself of sins, to attain development, to embark on the spiritual path, to begin awakening conscience and consciousness within oneself, and to free oneself from the influence of a sick society. Only by practicing conscious sufferings, the soul will learn some lessons and will be able to return to God, awakening in the Atman, the divine particle. The lilac-red rays of the setting sun softly streamed down the snowy walls of the temple atop the mountain and descended upon the figures of the disciples, enveloping them in a gentle glow. Now, after the end of the conversation, they had to undertake the long journey down the spiral staircase. But the return journey did not seem as tiresome. Not only because descending is much easier, but also because, at the top, the disciples had left behind all their negative attitudes, thoughts, and mistakes. Instead, they took with them the wisdom and unconditional love of the Keeper of Knowledge, which made the journey down a pleasant evening stroll.
Do you want to know more? Watch the animated masterpiece that reveals the mysteries of humanity. Discover more sacred knowledge in books. You can meet the main characters of books at our seminars. Find your amulet of power. Participate in an individual ritual. Open free channel with daily spiritual practices for yourself. All these you will find on our website www.amazon1.org. Share this book and spread the great knowledge. Then people's lives will change for the better, and you will accumulate good karma and be able to help all your loved ones.